Deep Web.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and on our website, thepick.com. And midweek, quite a bit to catch up on yet from the weekend, as well as looking ahead. I actually printed out Churchill from Saturday. You got the Foster preview card and meshing with Belmont, as we actually mentioned a little bit there with Andy, if you're listening to the replay from the last hour. And we'll probably touch on it. It's a nice sequence. There is, of course, a bigger issue. Didn't really want to dive into it yesterday I didn't have a complete, I don't think anybody's got a complete picture and understanding of what exactly is transpiring. But it came up at least tangentially with Rich yesterday, and the scenario that they're facing at Churchill is just daunting, and there's so much uncertainty when these episodes crop up. So in addition to the way in which the racetrack addresses a spate of fatalities and injuries, there is now, really for the first time in this seeming new era, the overlay of HISA and how it will interact. And this has actually been a dialogue that's gone on for really a month, more, 5 weeks essentially, from the minute the injuries and the circumstances arose, Derby week. And a total of 12, with two cardiac incidents involving the two Safi Joseph horses, a horse in the paddock that flipped and was critically injured, and one turf incident. So of the 12, four of them can't be associated at all. There was a big, not a big difference, but there was a difference when there were seven incidents and four of them were, completely impossible to tie to each other. That was one thing. Now, with a little added time and, with an additional five fatalities, eight total on the racetrack, on the main track, in different places. And so, it is one of those, whack-a-mole kind of a scenarios. You just have to keep digging, literally and sometimes figuratively, or figuratively and sometimes literally, when it comes to the main track. It's a helpless, having watched from afar, essentially, with the, this is probably the fifth major set of spate of fatalities in 13 years, 14 years, really, going back to 2009, 10, with Aqueduct, and then there's been the well-publicized other clusters, and there's nothing that HISA is going to do in this scenario that other regulatory agencies haven't done when confronted with these circumstances. You get the necropsies, you go over what conditions the horses were competing in, previous medical histories, if available, for what's available, all the various checkpoints that we've learned. And I suppose I could reach for Alan Foreman, and Alan could go through, the checklist, the task force at Aqueduct, which really set the benchmark for this kind of review and inspection, and it's really just kind of doubling up and redoubling the review of everything that's gone on here. Very, very perplexing. And given the way media outlets are choosing to sit like vultures on a branch of a forlorn tree, something out of a Western landscape, waiting to just thinking back to Santa Anita, where the news crews were parked there by Clocker's Corner, with the blood dripping from their fangs, waiting for an opportunity to sensationalize any injury or fatality. So there's only one way to to deal with it, and that is to just perform inspection and review, and just get get every rock overturned, and just look at every aspect. And as we've learned, there is regularly commonalities in these clusters, but there's no there's rarely one exact or even two or three exact definitions of what brought this on, and what what the causal elements are. You'll end up with a variety of conclusions. So, and things like the suggestion they don't have to suspend racing yet. What do you mean yet? Even with the work that's going to be done, there's not going to be one thing that stops it, completely. There just isn't. So I read the ominous headlines, no matter how thorough this is, you're not going to have, I guess, what some people think there has to be, which is a defining, either a villain or, a trap that is triggering these. So I read all these stories, and it's all familiar because we've gone through them. Not to reduce this to roulette, but I've spoken about, you know, chaotic number theory. If they spin the roulette wheel, you know, 100,000 times, all the numbers are basically going to get hit, you know, within a range, a fairly equal number of times. But in a short burst, like the burst that you see on the chart on the that's tracking the numbers that are coming up in roulette, you get repeaters, and you get, you know, within 30 spins, you might get 5 8s come up. It's chaotic number theory. This applies. We do know, you know, one thing we do know, that changes in surface and the beginning of a race meet, it can be, you know, very much an alarm bell period. And, you know, at this point, we're fairly well in now, you know, to the meet, which started, what, the last, the last Saturday of April. So it's going on 4 weeks. This is the fourth week of the meet. But the majority of them did happen in the first, let's say, 12 to 15 race days. I can go through all the quotes, and, you know, I see Dennis Moore is going to come and, you know, put a fresh set of eyes on the main track and see if Dennis, sees anything. And we talked just last week in Baltimore about John Passero coming in and just tinkering with the, you know, the track maintenance program and smoothing things over at Laurel. Sometimes a fresh, you know, set of eyes, especially when it's somebody the quality of Dennis Moore. I mean, there's a handful of elite, guys, that track supers that people look to. So, until there's more to go on, I'm sure you've seen the same pieces, Matt Hegarty, with one, Heise is going to put this, put together this emergency veterinary summit, which is, very similar to the task force efforts that we've seen before. I mean, they're just going to go over the same kinds of things, and I'm going to guess that they're going to draw similar conclusions, because that's the way it's just been on a regular basis when this happens. So, everybody's got to be on the most vigilant posture that they can in terms of going over their horse. And I mean, this means barn staff, it means regulatory vets, jocks when they're pre-race, when they're get aboard. There's not a lot of other magic ideas. One thing that you may or may not have seen in TDN, I think it was it yesterday. Did it go up yesterday? Earl Mack, I don't know if this was part of the platform of his award of merit speech. Earl Mack is suggesting the end of dirt racing. Would be a bold, call it a counteroffensive, I guess, to, I don't know who exactly you're answering to. That's one of the things. This is what we have to do. Says who? That's the part of this that is a little mystifying. Also mystifying, part of this, the HISA response. Horstmann, I guess Lisa Lazarus has been in touch with Horstmann, but Horstmann and racetrack practicing vets weren't part of the conclave, which seems counterproductive. So, the dirt question is interesting, and it's not I'm not trying to poke any fun at I don't know, Mac's expense, but it is an interesting discussion point now, to revisit. I talked about it myself last week when I was on the Bob Valvano show. So it we may hear more of that. It may get very hard to, to resist that as a as a partial response to external pressure. Very possible. And if there's resistance on that front, we should mention, I'm going to get Dick Powell, I'm sure Dick's got some thoughts on this. One thing that for those that are saying, no, we tried it, we didn't try it exactly. We instituted in California a widespread mandate, and there's certainly going to be people that say, "Well, see, it didn't work." That's not fair, because this would be a completely different generation of synthetic surface than the ones that were installed, for the most part, unsuccessfully. In California, 10 plus years ago now, I don't want to call it slipshod or slapdash manufacturing of the synthetic tracks, but they overpromised and underdelivered, all of them at the time, except for, honestly, let's be honest, the Tapeta has been the success and the exception, and has performed exactly how it's been promised. But the other surfaces, particularly Polytrack, which started to fall apart, they said, it doesn't matter, hot or cold, no maintenance. And they promised all this stuff, and none of it proved to be true. Virtually none of it. And so that circumstance left everybody with this eye rolling, not to mention the handicapping portion, it left everybody with just a, this is a disaster. It's not the way, this was a fool's errand and blah, blah, blah. If it comes down to making a widespread move to synthetic surface, and the not just the promise that it holds, in terms of safety numbers, but the evidence is overwhelming, actually, and Earl Mack does say that. Dick Powell, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. It took me 15 minutes to say, really, there's nothing anybody is going to conclude immediately, but I think some of the themes that go along with this circumstance are very familiar. I mean, I love how people are acting like, oh, it's such a mystery. It's not such a mystery. We know that we know how and why these generally occur. And then Heise, well, Heise what? What exactly? You got the same people that are going to look at this that have been looking at these previously. I don't know. I don't. Is the industry using it as a space laser shield or what? I don't get it.
Well, if insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the same result, I read where genius is the ability to know when to stop.
Yeah.
So we have reached neither achievement or goal. We're just, I give an example. When you were talking about clusters, and when people analyze baseball data, there's all sorts of anomalies. And the one example is you could have seven batters, and it's going to be single, double, triple, home run, making out, making out, making out. Now, the question is, well, how many runs is that going to yield? Well, if the first three guys that are going to make an out bat is going to not yield any runs. The other extreme is the first person at the single, double, triple home run. Well, that's going to equal four runs. So, and then combinations within. So some of that is random. And you have a Pete Alonso who's going to hit home every 10 at bats, and he's coming up in a perfect situation. But if he's leading off the inning, he has a chance to do less damage than if he's batting cleanup and the bases loaded. So a lot of that is left to chance. A lot of pitching statistics are an element of chance. And then the cluster phenomenon that you were referring to is also chance. That, yes, some of these things happen because of chance, and the clustering of the events become unexplainable when they do cluster. But I just watched this process, whatever you want to call it, this hand-wringing. It just doesn't lead me to think there's going to be an aha moment where some answer pops up. And to show you how, I'll try to be nice about this. There's just our industry went to synthetic tracks for a number of reasons. And one of the leaders was Richard Shapiro, who at that point was the head of the California Horse Racing Board.
Right.
And when they did the RFP, because some of the tracks were, especially Del Mar, publicly controlled, quasi-government with the Agricultural Society, that they needed to put out a competitive bid. So what did our geniuses do? We came up with a bid in the RFP that you only could bid if you had five racetrack installations. Well, that excluded Tapeda. Michael, at that point, did not have five. He has more than five now. But at that point, he didn't. But Polytrack had five. So that bid was rigged for Polytrack to get into Del Mar. And regardless of how it performed, the trainers kept asking for help during the meet. And Polytrack's answer was, well, we'll come in after the meet and examine everything. So no customer service during the meet. It's yours. Deal with it. If it needs fixing, we'll fix it after the meet. So that was just, you could not get off to a worse start. And coincidentally, Polytrack was half-owned by Keeneland. So it was in Keeneland, and Keeneland was at 50% ownership.
Right.
I think in the, I don't think that was international, but definitely in the United States. So here they have a vested interest, and why would they not be demanding? Wait a minute, we got some complaints here, California, real or imagined, but still they're customer complaints. They're supposed to respond to it, and they weren't. So synthetic tracks of all sizes and shapes and makes get off to a bad start because the issues were not addressed, were not fixed, or just explained. Some of the things to me made sense. The fact that your horse races different in the afternoon than it trained in the morning, yeah, of course that makes sense. It's a different atmosphere. Sun's out in the afternoon, tracks, you know, getting cuppy and brittle. You're not really watering synthetic tracks. So, yeah, that track that was real tight in the morning that you worked 59 on, you think you have a fit horse for the afternoon, and you get in the afternoon, you get to the eighth pole, your horse is staggering because it needed a couple more workouts because you got fooled in the morning.
Right.
Well, some of that could have been explained, and it wasn't because they just walked away from it. So we just had this history of even when we do something right, we do it wrong. I applaud Earl Mack's piece that he wrote. I don't know if we'll ever see it. I don't know if it's possible or anything else like that. But if we're sitting on a, let's say we didn't have Tapeter in the United States and there was this Tapeter experiment around the world and it was yielding tremendous results, it would be hard to say, well, let's just ignore that. But the fact that it's already been in the United States, I think it's up to version 10 that they've had that many advancements, and a lot of it has to do with being able to handle four seasons of weather. It's very hard on any dirt, sand, makes no difference. And if turf racing is what horses should be naturally racing on, this is a alternative to turf racing because you can't run turf racing 50 races a week. You know, that's impossible. So it's just at least the discussion has wandered over into that area, which may or may not happen. I don't think it'll happen, but it's something worth exploring. And I don't know, they came, they saw, and what did they? What's the answer? More analysis, more hand wringing, more whatever.
Now, one thing we should note about the Tapeta that in terms of adjusting as things have progressed and as it's evolved these different versions of it. One thing that they've made clear is that each composition of it. It has to be adjusted to the specific climate and weather patterns of the region of the track it's being installed. And again, I'll get back to what I said earlier: the overpromising and underdelivering, and the delivery of a one size fits all version of, the three products were Polytrack, ProRide, and Cushion Track at the time. And there were others too. I mean, from international Fiber Sand, which is in use in the UK and so forth. The Tapeta, the lab, as it were, well, it's Michael and his wife, right? Joan, is it Joan?
Joan Wakefield. Yeah.
Constantly trying to improve it and formulate it to the needs of the specific places where they're installing, and it's been a success. You can't argue it. You can argue about the aesthetics and what its influence would be. Should it come to widespread installation of synthetic tracks, But the product is performing, you know, as advertised at you know, the places, whether it's Presque and Turfway and Woodbine, Golden Gate, etc. So.
Well, and the amazing thing, Steve, is when you had Polytrack and the lack of customer service, and here you have Tapita, where security people are trying to throw this crazy guy off the track who's out there walking in high heels, and they're like, "Hey, you, get out of here. Oh, this is my track. This is my track." So, yeah, one person who takes literal and figurative ownership of his product, and you have another track where it's in, it's the have a nice day, we'll see you. We'll see you after the meet. So which, right off the bat, you could tell which track was going to succeed.
Well, we'll see what conclusions get drawn, and racing resumes tomorrow. And I hate, you know, I hate saying, oh, hold, you know, well, everyone will hold their breath. But it's going to happen. That's how it's going to, everybody's going to be on eggshells. And, there's already enough, this is a pressure that, makes it even harder on everyone. Tough one. Dick, before we talk a little racing, I have not had a chance to mention this morning yet. Word came yesterday. David Hooper, who was there for the early stages, University of Arizona, and somebody that had done virtually everything you could do around the racetrack as a regulator, as a steward, as you name it. David Hooper with a 6+ decade career in the game, and was a mentor to many aspiring racetrack hopefuls and personnel that are all over the industry. And I did not know David Hooper, but knew of him. And I wonder, I'm imagining you had a cross paths regularly.
Actually, no.
No? Never? No. Did? Interesting. Okay.
No, I didn't start a symposium to 2004 or 2005. Didn't really get to know any of the people in the program for a couple more years. So, no, we kind of missed that time when I would be gone and he would be there. So, no, I read all the accounts about it. And, yeah.
No, right. You'd see his name attached to all kinds of things.
Yes.
David Hooper. Hammer might, I'm going to guess that Hammer had, maybe had, I'm trying to think of who else, because he operated in Texas and Illinois, Kentucky, wrote for the Herald Leader, the racing form, I mean, you name it. And he was the program coordinator in the 90s. As the program was just starting to take shape. So David Hooper, 88. I wanted to slip that in. I also didn't mention yesterday or Monday the two different rulings, as it were, regarding Medina Spirit and Derby. For starters, the federal judge, I guess it was Thursday, or well, it got reported Thursday, handed down the judgment upholding Churchill's Baffert ban. And then there was also the administrative portion of a kind of a arbitrator style regarding the administrative portion, the KHRC portion of the calling the positive. And judge there, or the, not judge, the moderator, but what do you call them? What do you call a arbitrator? Arbitrator?
Probably.
Yeah. That also upheld the way in which KHRC had called the positive. I mean, essentially saying what everybody said at the beginning, which was, it came, let's say, from the topical ointment. It doesn't matter. It came from the topical ointment. Okay, came from the topical ointment. It doesn't. It was never going to preclude the rules as written. There was an ingredient in the topical that was illegal, and if it showed up in the horse, it was going to result in the. I mean, literally 24 hours after this happened, Dick. Right? I mean, it was like, well, I don't see what their recourse is. No matter how many times you try to, you know, twist the pretzel into a different shape, it the mechanics of it just seemed obvious at the moment, and hasn't changed. I mean, that's why, to me, this whole, you know, the forcing of this, and the, you know, the constant you know, attempt to get it overturned was just, it was a gigantic windmill tilt, and all it did was keep you know, a negative impression and storyline alive for three times longer than necessary. Take the loss, take the L, and say we'll do better, and we're, I mean, this could have been handled, and this could have been just so much easier than this tortured, and you know, it's a constant humiliation for everybody collectively.
Well, working backwards, all Bob had to do was follow through on what he said
originally
he would do.
Yeah, I know.
In terms of bringing in a vet and overseeing,
yep,
stable practices and everything else.
Yep.
All he had to do was that, and maybe the issue never happens, and maybe, you know, maybe
that's what's so.
Turns out a different way.
Exactly. I completely said that. And
even
times.
And even with the Forte positive from the hopeful, after May 22nd, that would not have been a positive.
Yeah.
Amazing. That threshold no longer exists.
Right.
It would not have tripped the meter. You know, so once again, I don't know.
It's that kind of, yeah, it's been this kind of morning. All right. Let's get to the pick three. We got about 5-6 minutes. Let's get to the pick three. Go ahead.
Pick three today begins in race number 7. We have class 3 going 1200 meters. Get that little start and then that quick little right elbow down the backside, outside post. Usually at a disadvantage here, so I normally just toss the 11 and 12 unless they have some serious running ability. So I'm going to go with number 3, Lucky 8, Karis Peden, Ricky Yu. They both had winners on the card already tonight. Looks like he has a nice pace, prompting running style, and has won at Happy Valley before. The favorite's going to be number 7, Party Warrior, Zach Purton, riding for Francis Loy. And they missed by a neck last time out from post 12. Now we come back from post 4. Big, big advantage there. And throw in number 10, Victory Scholars. Casper Founds, who's usually the king of Happy Valley, has his speedball breaking from post 5. Just looks like he fits these conditions very well. So the first leg in race 7, we're going to go 3, 7, and 10. Race 8 is going to be a single. Number 6, Sixth Generation, has just been on a roll. he won his last start by 4 lengths, and that picked up 10 rating points. So he went from class 4 carrying 135 pounds, moving up to class 3, but he gets in with 123 pounds. So even though he's facing 5 horses that are higher rated, he still gets in much lighter than he had before. And Benson Ho gets back in the saddle. So he's in a really good form cycle right now. Looks like he's going to be hard to beat, especially from the rail. This is going 2 turns. As long as he doesn't get shuffled way back, I think 6th generation just looks too tough for race 8. So we're going to single him, and then in race 9, we're going to go 3 deep again. Number 4, Sword Point, was the favorite in the early betting. He's been in against some really tough 4-year-olds, including Voyage Bubble, who won 2/3 of the Hong Kong Classic Series. And we're going to throw in number 9, Alacrity, a Chilean bred who had won 4 straight Chile races before coming to Hong Kong, including a Group 1 down there. He's had a, you know, he's taken his time acclimating to Hong Kong, but he has a one-dimensional running style. So post 12 should not hurt him too bad going 1,800 meters. He's going to be in the back with Zach Purton anyway. And he drew bad posts in almost all of his starts, so I don't think that's really going to affect him much. Normally, I wouldn't like post 12, but his running style, I don't think it really matters. He's going to have to pass all but one in this race. So I'm going to throw in the 9, Alacrity, and number 10, Nimble Nimbus. Alexi Bedell rides this one for Ricky Yu. 1-2 in a row, 3rd last time out, going 2 turns here at Happy Valley. Just looks like he fits well and has 4 wins over the Happy Valley surface. So he's kind of a horse for course. So race 7, 3, 7, and 10. Race 8, 6. Race 9, 4, 9, and 10.
3 by 1 by 3. How many multiples? How many times you're putting this through?
I bet it for $10.
All right. There you go.
$90 bet.
There we go. All right. Couple of minutes here. You want to slip in?
Let's go back to
Saturday. Yeah,
last week's champion and Trader Cup.
Yes.
Last Group One of the season. It had kind of a shocking upset in the sense that Russian Emperor won the race last year, so that's not a shock. But his form's been kind of a little bit up and down this year, and he was facing Romantic Warrior, who is darn near unbeatable when 10 furlongs and beyond. Surprisingly, Zach Purton put Romantic Warrior on the lead. I think he just did that. He wanted to control the pace, which he did. Some reason, down the backstretch, Derek Lung pulls out on Money Catcher and goes up first over and presses. I was like, not really sure why he's doing that, because you're behind a strong horse. If you sit, you set the pocket, you don't have to worry about him backing up into you. He's going to keep going. Yes, you're going to have to get by him, but why not just make one surge and try to outkick him? So Derek tried that tactic. Well, what happened was the 4th and 5th quarters were running 23 and change. Now, they kind of staggered home 24.23. So Romantic Warrior, despite all that class, really got tired. And who comes along to pick up the pieces but the defending champion, Russian Emperor, who won this race last year, went to Qatar this year, won a Group 1 2.4 million race, didn't do much in Dubai, but remember his last race, Steve. His prep for this race was a handicap that he carried 135 pounds in. So now he gets in 126, not just the weight off, but realize how much weight he conceded in that prep. So that was a better race than it looked on paper. Doug White had him fit and ready. Pulls off the win at 9-1.
It caused a stir. First thing Sunday morning.
Well, Romantic Warrior was 1-5.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No way he gets beat, but I thought that the key was what Derek did on his. You know, he kind of sacrificed Money Catcher, who I thought had a shot at winning. And once you make that move, Romantic Warrior is not going to let you go by. So
here we go.
They're off.
I don't know why I'm not sorry about this, folks. It's running fine, but I.
I got sound on mine.
Huh. I can't.
Quarters away, there. Fourth receiving a nice run. Party Warrior from Family Folks, who's three deep punching at the breeze. Our Lucky Glory Heroic Master, 2.5 to Endear Damjong Singh Chateau, and You're My Everything flat out chasing last. They turn at the 350. Smoky Bear, Victory Scholars now called upon as they go for home. Out wide a Lucky 8, Power Kip, Party Warrior, Our Lucky Glory, out deeper as Heroic Master. He's starting to dash down center track. The leader now is Power Kip. He's taken control here from Victory Scholars, and here comes 500 in Hong Kong for Matthew Chadwick, and Power Kip, he's at the line. Power Kip from a photo second, it's either Lucky 8 or Victory Scholars. And so then photos fourth, we had Our Lucky Glory with...
It's not going to do much good here, Dick. 8-1 winner, Power Kip for Matt Chadwick and KL Menmen, 8-1.
Yeah, he carried the high weight. He was number one, so he had 133 pounds. His last two, he drew bad. He drew 11 and 12. Today, he drew the rail, but you need some luck to win from down there. But Chadwick knows his way around. We ran second and third in that one. But no cigar. Party Warrior to favorite. Just loomed boldly and then did not finish up. But Power Kep. I didn't consider him really among my top five even. So,
well, $18 winner here, and maybe. Well, I guess that's. There's no way to regroup in terms of. I guess you just have to. Well, what do you think? Just play. Maybe play the ninth a little bit with the.
Yes.
With the four. Yes. With the 4-9-10.
Yes.
Go after it that way. All right.
Yep.
What are we looking forward to this weekend?
All right. Now, big change. New post times on Sundays. No more Saturday night, Sunday morning. All Sunday morning, because of the heat and humidity in Hong Kong this time of year, they're moving the 1 o'clock local post time back to 4 o'clock, which means for us on the East Coast, racing is going to begin at 4 a.m. and will continue right through. I have the post times here, 8:50 in the morning, Sunday. So you're like me, especially this time of year. The sun is up so early. I mean, race 4 is 5:30. Race 5 is 6 o'clock in the morning. Race 10, 8:50. So I can catch, definitely the treble, and they also have a newer treble that is earlier in the card. I think it begins in race 3. I'm not sure what the 10-race card, where it's actually going to begin. But there are two pick threes, but that's important. Now, that's going to be every single weekend at Sha Tin with one exception. There's a July 3rd card that will be run at the normal 1 o'clock post. But other than that, they're running at 4 o'clock. Get a little bit later in the day as temperature, humidity starting to drop. So safety issues, they're going to do that. So for me, man, I'm going to get up early.
Yeah.
It's no different really than the Happy Valley. You get up and you start watching racing, and you can always make your advance bets. You can bet Saturday night and have all your, current odds and things like that. So if you want to bet early and wake up, watch them. Or if you just want to wake up and do your handicapping in real time, you're going to have a good six races easily to play. So that's, I'm excited about that.
Nice.
My own simple little mind. I'm like, yeah, this is good. I like this. Oh, that's big news. Last week, Zach Purdon, 5 wins. Lyle Hewitson had a big day. He had 4, and he's now 5th in the riding standings, which is nice to see because he's a good rider, gets a lot of wins with Doug White, and he's kind of inching himself up the standings. Vincent Ho is the clear 2nd place behind Zach. Hugh Bowman, who won, I should have mentioned, who won the Champion and Trader Cup, so he gets a nice Group 1 victory. He's 3rd with 52. And the winner, Steve, we watched him win in real time at Ascot when he was a 3-year-old. He won the Harcourt. And I remember being on the air with you, and he won and had the spectacular pedigree because his dad was a multiple Group 1 stakes winner in Australia. Well, they bred her to Galileo, gets a nice horse, gets sold to Hong Kong, gets gelded. You don't see many group stakes winners by Galileo get gelded.
Yeah.
But he has now won over $6 million U.S.
Amazing.
And still has quite a few big races ahead of him. So for the next year or two, that's worked out very, very well. So that was great to see, and we will go from there.
Very good. HKJC portion of the morning taken care of. Let's spend the last 5-7 minutes, Dick, looking at Presque Isle, and just pulling up. Let me get your picks. I'll put them up at the website as well as we talk. Today's 8 race card.
The normal Pablo Morales is winning 30%. He's the leading rider. Gallardo is 2nd, 23%. Then you got to find value. And 2 of the riders you can find value on are a 7-pound apprentice, Alice Beckman. And she had a win last week where she just gunned to the front, never looked back, just did a great job. Martina Rojas also has talent, 7-pound apprentice rider. She's 2-for-9 at the meet. And then Erin Walker, who's one of my favorites because I look for speed horses because she gets horses out and lets them go. She started out 4-for-16, so she's hit the ground running for this meet. So those type riders, you can make money because they're not going to get bet the way Morales and Gallardo are going to bet. And yet they're very competent, and if you get a price, all the better. The trainer is Tim Girton, 5 wins from 13 starts. Ed Rojas has 4. There's a couple guys at 3, including Teresa Connolly, who I mentioned last week, seems to have more starters this year than she had the last couple of years. So she's 3-for-9. She's off to a good start. Yesterday's card was a little bit chalky, and yet the last pick 5, you know, the $2 payout was $1,100. And with the smaller fields, you can play a $2 pick 5. You know, big fields, 50 cents is the way to go. But when you got some smaller fields, why not bet a little bit more? So I thought that was an overlay on those prices. Today we have the normal 8 post time at 3 o'clock. There's a very nice 2-year-old race here in race number 2. I went with number 5, bit of captain, a first-time starter by Cole Front. This is one of the first foals of Cole Front to make it to the track. The dam was by Discreet Cat. I didn't get a chance to talk about him when they announced him passing away in Japan the other day, but he was one of my favorites. So this horse has some quick genes in its pedigree. Tim Ham does well with first-time starters. So I'm looking at the 5, a bit of captain. number six going up from Ron Potts. Potts is 12% first time out, has a couple of nice breezes from the starting gate at Presque Isle to get ready. The Dam has thrown two winners from three foals to race. And then of the ones that have raced, number two, Another Day of Work, Jerry Brooks is the trainer. It's just kind of an even fourth, fifth, faded to fifth in the rally, in the stretch run, but still gets a race over the track. Should learn a lot from that experience. And of the ones who have raced, he looks like the best. But some nice first-time starters in race number two. And then farther down in the card, race six is a 25 claim, and not one of the two lifetime. Number four, Miss Easy from Tim Hand. Pablo Morales broke its maiden at Thistledown last October, first time out, as the 3-10 favorite. So obviously the word was out, this horse can run. She delivered that day, then came back in allowance race, another wet track with high or low, always a wet track, and just faded in the drive. Been off since then, but Ham is good off layoffs. Morales is a sign of confidence getting him aboard. Has a couple of decent workouts, but has enough workouts to indicate that she will be ready. Mastery was a horse I thought was going to be a good sire. So far, that hasn't been the case, but he has a nice one in here, so I'm going to go six. Then I'll just play cold exactas over the two morning line type favorites, one and two. So six over 1-2 in race number six. And then in the ninth race, these are eight claimers. And number three, Big Thorn from Cassandra Judd. Horse has been claimed in each of its last three starts. Missed by a head of Churchill last November, finished up the season on Tapita at Turfway in December, ran poorly. Now you could say, well, they ran poorly on Tapita. That's the last start of the year. Clearly something went wrong. The fact it got beaten by 13 lengths doesn't concern me. Now is coming in fresh. Was in pretty good form last year against much better company. So I think number five, Big Thorn with Rosario Montañez in the irons, looks very tough in the finale today.
Nice. And of course, you want to talk tough? Rosario Montañez, the right guy to talk about. Just an absolutely unbelievable, fearless, no matter. I mean, he's had two injuries that would have ended most people's careers, if not lives. And he's come back. Just amazing, the kid.
Yeah, it's a pretty wide open competitive race, but the five has speed, and speed going short at Prescott is what I look for.
Right.
So he kind of fits the bill.
There we go. Presque Isle Downs and Dick's analysis up at the website. Dick, this was productive. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you from Belmont next week.
All right, Steve, be good.
Dick Powell, everybody, and HKJC, and PID, Presque Isle Downs. Going to take our first break. I'll circulate Timo, Pat Morrell. We'll put Pat's analysis. You can put their heads together. I'm waiting to hear from, let's see if Jeff or Jerry. Thoroughgraph is down since yesterday, and they thought they were going to be back and ready this morning. They may, as soon as I hear from Jeff or Jerry, Jeff's on the West Coast, I'll provide an update. But if you've been looking for Thoroughgraph, and tomorrow we'll have our Thoroughgraph session, and certainly going to probably look at the couple of the Churchill races, I imagine, and for Saturday. But the last time they had this was when they're downtown in Lower Manhattan, and when there was the flooding, right during which hurricane? What hurricane was that? That hammered the not Andrew. Oh, for goodness sakes. Anyway, that was so devastating up the Jersey Shore and all over the place. They got hit hard, as did DRF. The servers were down, like in Battery Park or somewhere. And it has that kind of feel. I know they tweeted yesterday that that their web dev team was expecting to be back up this morning, but they aren't as of now. So I'll provide an update on that as soon as the opportunity, as soon as I hear, essentially, what we've got for an answer. Hopefully sooner than later. I do have some results from Indy and actually from Brask from the last couple of days. And there's actually still, I do want to still do some follow-up from the weekend, and that includes, I want to get a hold of Bill McLean out at Golden Gate. I'm going to be somebody that won the All-American on Monday. Bill McLean's been winning races a while. It'll be fun. And that Cesar Dalba, who was a quarter horse guy, right? Was a quarter horse jock, as well as a trainer, I think. Yeah, that win that he had. It's always nice to get somebody new. Somebody you know is next. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Hour two at the races. Back after this.
Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale.